our real goal, yes, is to educate people on the candidates, but it's really to like unlock this aha moment for every voter that state and local politics really do like matter a lot. And that's really our big ethos here.
Hello, this is the Great Battlefield Podcast. I'm Nathaniel G. Perlman. A great political battle is being fought right now between progressives and the forces of reaction on the other side. This show is about the political entrepreneurs and other progressive leaders who are finding new or improved ways to fight. My guest today, Walter Lay, is founder and CEO of Branch Politics. He's a political tech entrepreneur who's created a product called Ballot Builder, available in Georgia and a growing number of states. Ballot Builder helps organizations create nonpartisan voter guides. We had a good conversation about his career path out of tech generally and into the political space. So, after a quick word from my sponsor, my interview with Walter Lay of Branch.
This episode is brought to you by Graphicacy. Graphicacy is an analytic design firm that can help you advance the mission of your organization using your own real data and information. They are 21st century visual communicators who create interactive graphics, motion graphics, and data visualizations. You can find Graphicacy at graphicacy.com. That is GRAPHICACY.com. With Graphicacy's help, you can visualize a better world.
Walter, would you mind introducing yourself and giving me a quick biography?
Yeah, sure thing. My name is Walter Lay. I am from Tampa, Florida. Went to school at the Georgia Institute of Technology in Atlanta. I studied electrical engineering, minored in business, worked for a couple of years in the financial technology space at a startup in Atlanta before deciding to kind of leave my job and do something more meaningful, more impactful with my kind of technical background. So that was about 4 years ago. I founded Branch, and Branch is a nonpartisan voter education startup headquartered in Atlanta, Georgia. And our mission is to help people understand the ways in which their vote matters at the state and local level. So our product is Ballot Builder.
And why'd you call it that?
We call it that because we help organizations build ballot-oriented voter guides that they can incorporate into their get-out-the-vote efforts and voter education efforts.
Very cool. I have a soft spot for people who bring tech into politics, as you might imagine, and who are interested in improving the democracy, hence why you're on the show and hence why you're interesting to me and hopefully to some other people who listen. Tell me a little bit about your road into tech to start with. Sometimes a electrical engineering major is not for the faint of heart, depending on kind of how your mind works. But what took you to that first?
My technical background is something that has like always been a part of my life. I grew up playing video games. I learned to read off of video games. I would always like call my parents into the room to like read what was on the screen.
What is a video game when you're getting going? What era are we talking about?
So I was born in the early 90s. So Nintendo 64, Legend of Zelda, Crash Bandicoot, those sorts of games. But eventually my parents got tired of being called in the room and they said, you have to learn how to read this for yourself. And so that's what kind of motivated me to learn.
Because a lot of people learn at four, so you must have been operating controls pretty early.
Definitely, I could work a video game before I knew how to read, that's for sure. The next era of video gaming was kind of these online platforms. Specifically, there was a platform called Neopets that was big, and there was a part of Neopets where you could create your own page for your group and your guild. And I remember you could use like HTML to code this. And at the time I was maybe 10, but that was my first kind of intro into coding. And I remember just being like fascinated, spending hours, you know, adding all these unnecessary like features and videos and things like that to my page. And in sixth grade, we had a requirement as part of our sixth grade English class that we had to keep a reading log of the books that we would read. This is when I started to try to teach myself how to code. At the time, I would get these like large how to code textbooks from like Barnes and Noble. And I remember asking my teacher, I was like, can I count this towards my like reading log? And she allowed me to, but these were like, I mean, thousand page, these are like textbooks essentially.
What was your first language?
Java. I guess like HTML and like that sort of web
front end sort of stuff.
Count that. But yeah. then it was Java was my first kind of real programming language.
How about on the electrical engineering side? I never really did much with that, but I have some sense of like gates and things, and it seems awfully cool.
I probably don't know much more than you, which is the funny part. When I started at Georgia Tech, I kind of declared the major because it was something that a couple friends were doing. But I remember walking in the very first day of class and hearing all of these people who were so into electrical engineering. They were talking about Intel's new processor designs that had just come out. And that's just not my interest. I have no interest in any of that. So I kind of took the core classes, which were more like theoretical than anything. I found them really interesting. And then when it got time to kind of take my elective classes, I kind of stayed away from electrical engineering. I studied some things around like robotics, but most of my classes were in like physics and things I found interesting. And pretty much straight out of school, I stepped into like a software engineering job.
Did you like the world of software engineering as a profession?
Yeah, definitely. It's still something I get like very inspired by. It's so cool to me. Like it's this almost like new medium that exists in the world where you can just take these thoughts and ideas that you have and put them into code and bring them to life in a way that like interacts with the physical world. Like that's something I still get very kind of inspired by.
It's kind of a miracle I always thought of it as like a remote control toy when I was learning to program. It's like you can give a series of commands and have something else obey them.
It's wild.
Yeah, it is wild. What pulled you out of that world, which you sound like you're reasonably content with, to start Branch?
So for a couple of years out of college, I worked for a financial tech startup, first as a software engineer, and then I started to do things more related to product design and product management. And it was great. I learned a lot. I learned that I love like the startup environment. I love the kind of scrappiness of it. Things are always changing. There's always new ideas. I was working in the financial tech industry, and we were eventually just helping these kind of big corporate financial players make more money, which kind of got jading after a while. I started to think more if there was like a way that I could have more impact with the sort of work I was doing. Had never really been involved within politics. I was the sort of person who voted once every like 4 years. At the time, the 2018 elections in Georgia, where Stacey Abrams was running for the first time, had just happened. This is in the Trump era. And so political conversations are still happening all the time. It just seemed like a really like interesting space to start looking at and see if there was some way that I could have an impact with that within kind of the technology space. So that's kind of what prompted me to start looking at the space and eventually leave my job.
I mean, you had, you mentioned a minor in business. Had you in mind, I'd like to have my own business someday, like a lot of people do?
Yeah, the startup that I worked for, I had interned for in college. And just being around that world was amazing. Like I loved it. I did another brief internship with like a larger corporation and just found it very like stifling. It wasn't my vibe. And also my parents, my family, they're all entrepreneurs. They have a manufacturing business. And so I always kind of grew up with the mantra that like, you have what it takes to go and start your own thing. And that's a really meaningful way to kind of chart your own path. So I had some idea that I would end up there. The politics piece of it was what was really surprising.
What was the first move you made towards starting Branch?
So I was still working at my job full time when I started to like explore ideas for Branch. I got a few friends together with like different skill sets that were like interested in helping me out with this project. But the first things I was looking at were really like political conversations online. This to me was like one of the like most obvious ways that our democracy is kind of like having issues is whenever you look online, you see these really tense political conversations. And I started to just think about like, how could we maybe create some sort of tech platform that helped facilitate better conversations online? And so we did that for probably maybe 6 months or so. It's just kind of a part-time exploratory project. Started talking.
When you're saying we, who's we?
Yeah, it was myself, and I had like two or three friends, one of whom was like a designer, one of whom was another like software engineer, people that were just kind of helping me out to kind of make this a reality.
Okay, so you experimented a little bit with social listening or online conversations, and then what happened?
And then kind of things came to a head at my job, and I decided to leave.
More like a push out sort of situation?
It was a bad boss. I had a bad boss that I was kind of just...
They're the worst, bad bosses.
They're the worst.
Don't be a bad boss.
I try my hardest. yeah, it was a good experience from a learning perspective.
I think negative lessons are some of the best.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Sometimes I'll catch myself saying something and I'm like, that's something that he said to me. So then I'll go back to him and I'm like, I'm going to take everything I just said back. I'm really sorry for that. And so that, I decided to leave and still not fully sure of the idea that I was going to like step into running my own thing full time because it just seems so sudden. But I decided to kind of take the leap, realized I probably wouldn't get another chance like this for a while. This was like fall of 2019 for context.
There are some things about to happen in the fall of 2019.
there were. And that's why it just felt from like a timing perspective that, you know, I kind of just have to take a risk.
Had you some savings from the years of working?
Not really. Not intentionally. I was still kind of living on a college student's budget. Still living in like the same place I lived in college. So I was definitely like making more than I was spending, but definitely had not like saved up with the intention of being able to support myself for a while, you know, starting my own company.
Yeah. So when did you converge on an idea that is what you're now working on?
For the first 3 months after I had quit my job, I really didn't know much about politics at all still, how it worked. That was like the goal of those first 3 months, was just to learn as much as possible. I like packed up my car. Again, I'm living in Atlanta at the time, packed up my car and drove up to New Hampshire and volunteered for a few of the like presidential primary campaigns going on at the time to see what it was like up close, you know, door knocked.
Which campaigns?
Door knocked for, I don't know if I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, but I would like door knock for Elizabeth Warren and then go to a phone bank for Joe Biden and then went and door knocked more for Beto O'Rourke. And it was really just so I could get as much as possible.
Do you think you were effective? Did you ever hit the same door twice and try to talk someone from one campaign you'd already sold to another?
No, different neighborhoods. Different turf, but I mean, I had all the experiences of like being told off, being yelled at, you know, I'd be walking up the driveway and they'd come out and they'd say, get out of here.
You know? Did you come to a conclusion for yourself about who you wanted to support?
Not necessarily like through the canvassing process. And by the time that it was time for me to vote in Georgia, you know, Biden was kind of the only candidate you could choose. So not through that process.
Okay. So you're learning about politics. That's one element of politics is sort of presidential field campaigning, but it's a big and complex world. So what was next?
Yeah. And so, and really this is like the kind of key to the experience is, again, part of my background is in product design. And with product design, we're big on interviewing users, interviewing people who are designing for. And so really throughout the whole first 3 months, I mean, we had probably over 100 conversations with just anyone we could talk to about politics. We talked with people who were super involved, super voters that are voting multiple times a year and even the small local elections. We talked with plenty of people who had never voted before, plenty of people who voted just once every 4 years. But throughout all of that, we were learning so much about what motivates people, where people stand on politics, and the sort of problems that they have. One thing that was really interesting that eventually was the thread that when I started to pull on it kind of led to the creation of Branch, was we would ask people on a scale of 1 to 10, how impactful do you believe that your vote is? And the people who would say 9 or 10, believing that their vote was super impactful, these are all the people that hardly voted. Whereas you had these people who voted in multiple elections every year, and they would say, I don't know, maybe a 3 or a 4.
They knew more.
Yeah, exactly. And at first, that's what I thought too. It was kind of this like sense of, you know how the system really works. But as we started to unpack it more, these people would say, well, you know, when you're talking about the presidential election, it's a 3 or a 4. But when you're talking about local elections, when you're talking about state elections, that's when it becomes a 9 or a 10. That was kind of the initial window that, you know, we started to look through and realize that these local elections that most people don't know about can actually be like the key to really like unlocking this deep civic engagement and like instilling a sense that like your vote actually does matter a lot, but maybe not how you originally think about it.
So you've continued to use the word we in all this. As you're incubating this idea, you are still in relationship with a designer and other people that end up coming in with you, or what's happening there in terms of the team?
Yeah, I've always from the beginning had what I'll say is like a kind of a rotating suite of friends who have been very kind and gracious to help me get this idea off the ground. I also, I think in general, just use that pronoun
use the royal we for this.
Yeah, exactly. But at this time,
we are not amused.
The original people who I had helping out had kind of gone and they were now working full-time jobs. So at this point I had some other friends that were helping me out with kind of this phase of the project, but still this isn't like a team at this point. This isn't a full-time team except for myself.
Okay. So what's the true founding story? To me, this is in the run-up to, I'm going to incorporate around this idea and give it my all.
Yeah. Really, I would say the real kind of seed of the idea came from the very first time that I voted in Georgia was in 2018. And this was when Stacey Abrams was running for the first time. And this was a midterm election. As far as like experiences in voting go, this just really pulled out all the stops. I showed up to my polling location on election day and there was like a 3-hour line, hundreds of people outside.
It should not be that way.
It should not be that way. It definitely has gotten a lot better in Georgia. But despite all of this, there was also like a huge sense of like community. People were talking in the lines. There was all these just people that had gone and gotten like donuts and were handing them out in the lines. This is before this was now illegal to do in Georgia.
What a crazy development. Yep.
I remember standing in line, not even at the time knowing what to Google search, but I remember being like, I should try to like prepare. I knew about the governor's race, but I should try to like find some information. I didn't even know the term like ballot at the time. So I didn't know to look up like what's on my ballot. Anyways, I found this article that was put out by a local news outlet in Atlanta. And I remember reading through it and reading all of these things about, you know, public service commissioner district 2, and here are the candidates, and public service commissioner district 4, and here are the candidates, and state senator district 38. And I remember reading this and my eyes were just like glazed over, not knowing what any of this meant, not knowing what was relevant to me. And I probably read this article, like skimmed this article for 5 minutes, X'd out of it. And then when I actually went to go vote, I was like Christmas treeing my way through this ballot, essentially picking like, sometimes I had seen like a candidate's name on like a yard sign. I was like, oh, great. Other times it was like, you know, I'll vote for like, this one sounds like they're a woman, so I'll vote for them. I remember not thinking much about that at the time, but I remember leaving after waiting in line for 3 hours, after expecting to feel so proud of myself. I remember just leaving feeling icky, like I had just like made a mistake.
Like you'd taken a test and maybe not aced it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, which definitely like hit my, you know, Georgia Tech nerd side as I just flunked my first voting.
And here you were, a college graduate who'd taken some interest in politics.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
That was like, again, an event that happened that I almost didn't think much about until, you know, marry this with all of these interviews we were doing with people, these really involved people who were talking about the importance of state and local politics. which originally I had like no interest in. I was like, these sound boring. Like, who cares about judges? People talked a lot about like, who are these judges? I was like, judges, that sounds boring. And then really as then I started to explore this more, as I started to have more conversations about like, well, tell me about judges. Like, why are they important? Why do you care about them so much? Tell me about this public service commissioner. Why is it that you're so passionate about this? It was this sort of eye-opening experience for me, again, kind of stepping into the space for the first time, of how much your vote does matter. And it's all of this stuff that I've seen before that everybody sees. You talk to people about not knowing about what's on their ballot. Most people recognize that as an issue, but a lot of times what they don't realize is that this also sense of like apathy, or the sense of that their vote doesn't matter, like these two things are part of the same equation. And really, like, that can be the solution to having this like really empowering sense of like voting and doing your duty and actually like making a difference on what our government looks like.
So a lot of times if you're starting a business and you have an idea, you do market research, you're doing customer research, but market research, meaning look around and see what's out there. And to some extent, just by Googling and trying to figure out, you're discovering that there seems to be an absence of a good information source for someone about to vote that would help them. As we both know, there are things out there that preceded you, but you didn't see much out there. What was the market research phase of your startup?
Yeah, so some of the big things that we realized as like resources that are already out there are, you have like maybe comparable products to us, which is like a Ballot Ready or like a Vote 411. And then you also have more like, I don't know, Ballotpedia, which I'm not sure exactly how to like categorize them, but just informational sources. And local journalism as well plays like an important kind of role of how people find this information a lot of times, especially in places where like local news outlets will do endorsements of candidates and pretty like in-depth, thorough research. Those are a lot of the things that we looked at. What we saw with like a lot of these products, a lot of the informational sources, is that a lot of them either like didn't have complete information, or the sort of user experience, which I used to mean like the experience of like reading, for example, when you go through Ballotpedia, you have to know like what district you live in, at least at the time, like you have to know what information you were looking for. It's something that made it very prohibitive to people, even like me at the time, where I don't have a lot of background going into this. The whole space has a very steep learning curve. If you want to like learn about local government, if you want to learn about state government, there's a very steep learning curve for that. And none of the resources out there really did a good job at kind of smoothing that learning curve, so to speak. And I thought that's something that we could do through really great user experience. And I also thought it's something that we needed to do through great content. The content itself, like how you describe the office of the governor to someone, that is such an important part of the step, because you have to really like simplify things and understand that the majority of people reading this don't know what a city council person actually does. Maybe they've heard of their city council, but actually like breaking it into kind of plain terms is a whole other issue.
I'm kind of fascinated by the idea that what you learned in startup tech, including product management, including what you would get if you read Lean Startup, or there's quite a number of books about kind of the process of starting a company, how applicable that methodology is here in politics in a startup that a lot of tech people probably don't even usually contemplate as an area that they might reach.
Yeah, I think it's very applicable. And I think that's a lot of those kind of lessons and practices are things that we brought into this space that I think ended up helping us develop like a really successful product. Some of those things that we did early on, before we created our website, we did a very like rough MVP, minimum viable product, in which we went to Austin, Texas, at the time was having elections. And the original idea for our platform was actually a audio-based medium where we would have interviews with candidates. We would do a podcast that went through like, here's all the candidates. We created podcast episodes for a handful of things on the ballot. And we found our beta testers and we literally created a SoundCloud playlist that was unique to each person based on like where they live. Like we did the back end work of like understanding like what would be on their ballot, and we created like a customized SoundCloud playlist.
I could imagine that being very cool for a very small proportion of actual voters.
Yeah, exactly. But we learned a lot without having to actually like develop anything. We learned that audio media is like a really great thing, but probably, you know, the core product needs to be text-based. But we also learned that people really like loved having this information. And we achieved what we wanted to, which was that when these people went to go vote, they would report to us afterwards. They were like, it felt amazing. I knew who these people were, and I knew who to make a decision for this like state primary that Texas was having at the time. We did that as like a kind of a lean startup inspired approach before actually building our full product.
How did you cover your expenses as you got going?
Yeah. Originally, we had one of my family members invested a small amount of money up front. I wasn't paying myself. And that was for the first election that we covered. One of the biggest expenses that a startup like ours would incur is like engineering costs. And this is where I come into play. So I was doing all the engineering work myself, still do a lot of it myself. And that allowed us to save a lot on like where a startup like ours might have a huge capital expense to begin with. Things like marketing, again, we had a lot of really positive support from just organizations and individuals within the Atlanta community that would like boost this out through their various channels. Before the general election in Georgia in 2020, we did a Kickstarter campaign where we crowdfunded about $25,000 to kind of fund.
Tell me about that, because that's actually something you see more now, that people have company ideas, product ideas, and they take it out to Kickstarter. It's always struck me as a lot more work than people think. What was your experience there?
Yeah, Kickstarter's interesting. It is a lot more work than you think. You're creating a full produced video product. We spent, I think, a month making our video. And even that was like a very accelerated timeline. It was a lot. One of the reasons that we kind of justified it is because it kind of doubled as an opportunity for us to also like still spread our message in between an election, gain more of a community of supporters. And throughout this, I mean, we had at the end of it, I think 300 people who are now like financially backing us, who then we turned to during the general election. We said, hey, we created it. We did it. Will you distribute this to your community? Which ended up being a really helpful like way to build our base.
Are you a for-profit or a nonprofit?
We are a for-profit public benefit corporation. And so as a for-profit public benefit corporation, we incorporate and with a social mission as kind of our first and foremost primary prerogative. But apart from that, we are structured very much like a for-profit, which in the political space is something that's also helpful in the sense that we get to kind of work with a lot of different types of nonprofits and not have to worry as much about, you know, traditional restrictions that may apply.
Yeah. Did I see somewhere that you went through like an incubator funder sort of thing?
Yeah, we went through the TechStars program, like a startup accelerator network that operates globally. We went through their chapter that specifically focused on social impact startups, which is also coincidentally located in Atlanta. And we went through that at the beginning of this year, 2023.
Tell me about that.
Really cool experience. One of the things I love about this podcast is it's kind of an intersection of politics and tech, which I think is like pretty niche. So a lot of times I feel very lonely, I would say, in this kind of world.
And I used to feel more lonely. I think there were only a few people when I started my company, but now it seems like it's a flourishing field with zillions of people.
But that's also how I feel in the kind of social impact space, is this intersection of social impact and tech can feel a little lonely sometimes. And so I was in this with 9 other startups who are doing everything from like education technology platforms to help teachers be more effective and create lesson plans, to startups that are focused around like education around like recycling and how people can recycle products to make like more of an environmental impact. So a lot of like really cool people, a lot of very inspiring people. And that was just the best part of it, was being around them.
Can you explain exactly what you're building or have built?
Sure. So our company's name is Branch. Branch's mission is to make it easy for people to understand what is on their ballot and the ways that their vote has a lot of potential impact at the state and local level. One of our primary products is called Ballot Builder. And Ballot Builder is a software product that helps organizations working in the voter education space. So civic engagement nonprofits, Get Out the Vote organizations. We help these groups create nonpartisan voter guides that ultimately help improve Get Out the Vote outcomes. The way the product works is that the organization receives like a branded URL that's unique and customized to their organization. And when a voter visits that URL, they're able to enter in their address and receive a personalized look at what is on their unique ballot. For each of those things on the ballot, they can read what that office does, who are the candidates running for that office, where the candidates stand on key issues in like a nonpartisan way, and then ultimately understand why it matters.
So explain the business model.
Yeah, so the business model is that we license out this technology, Ballot Builder, to grassroots organizations that are working in the civic engagement space. We started in Georgia, and a lot of our client base is here. So we work with organizations like the Georgia Conservation Voters, the New Georgia Project, Asian Americans Advancing Justice, the Association for Latino Elected Officials. These are all clients of ours here in Georgia, and they effectively pay us on an annual basis to receive a custom voter guide for their organization that then they incorporate in their Get Out the Vote efforts.
All of those, to my ear, rang progressive ecosystem, but nonpartisan. Do you restrict who you would allow to use your technology in any way?
So yeah, for clarity, most of our organizations we work with are 501c3 nonpartisan organizations. We do work with a handful of 501c4 organizations. Typically, we don't restrict who we work with, and that's mainly because what we provide is a pretty standard tool, and that it's a source of nonpartisan information about who the candidates are. And in our view, if that is kind of distributed in different communities or whatever their kind of political alignment is, that generally there's not ways for organizations to kind of inject their kind of own beliefs into the software.
A lot of people on both sides of the aisle prepare voter guides, which are akin to the endorsements you mentioned earlier. You have churches that would give their suggestions about who to vote, distribute paper to their flock, or similarly for lots of other groups. It seems like something you could do or tailor your product to do and provide that to anybody. Do you anticipate wanting to do that, or would you stay clear of that, and why? A tailored guide so that you could put a check mark saying who you want, who you endorsed. If you're an environmental group, even in the primary, or not, you might want to indicate that. And I would think there's a market for that.
Yeah. I mean, first and foremost, our ethos is how do we focus on what voters want, what voters need? And one of the biggest things that we hear from voters is that voters really want to receive unbiased information. They want like a holistic look at the candidate. Even when you talk about like specific issue voters, like somebody who cares a lot about the environment, they also care to know what candidate stances are in healthcare and other issues like that.
I mean, a lot of voters, I would imagine, would want to know which side of a plethora of issues a candidate was on. And does that come through in your profile?
Yeah, it does. So all of our profiles are written in a way that's very effectively like lists very clearly and make it clear like where the candidate stands on an issue. But we also don't pass any sort of value judgment or assumption about here's what you should feel about that as a voter. We leave that up to them. That's kind of our ethos, how we approach this space. And as it involves kind of organizational endorsements, we do allow an organization, if it's a 501c4 or a PAC that's paying for this, to include like, here's our endorsed candidate, and here's why we're endorsing that candidate. But also with the caveat of also here's all of the other information about where the candidates stand. We're not just limiting it to our one view as an organization. You can read more about where the candidates stand.
So for example, you could have potentially a pro-choice and a pro-life group, both using your tool, and a similar kind of information would hit a voter for either side, but they would see the pro-life would see the pro-life endorsement and the pro-choice would see the pro-choice endorsement. Just exploring this a little bit, the partisanship and the ideological area.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is a voter guide that is like being received from this organization. So there's kind of that initial like entrance into it. But with something like, I think abortion is a great issue to talk about because it's usually one of those issues that is very focused on squarely, especially if you look at like a pro-life voter where, you know, they're messaged around this one issue and might not see, you know, here's where the candidate stands on economic policies that I might disagree with, even if I do agree with them on this one issue. So a lot of what we try to do is push away from this kind of focus on a singular issue, even if we do offer, here's what the organization is saying about a candidate, and try to provide voters with a holistic unbiased view as well for the candidate, because generally that's what we've heard people really want and they really value.
So what's the state of rolling this out? Like when I went to your site and I put Colorado and Vermont and DC, the three places that I'm most close to, you weren't ready there yet. And my sense is that you kind of spreading out from Georgia, or that's the plan, but it is a non-trivial task to obtain the information about ballots broadly across the country. And a few other people are doing that, but it's not easy.
Yeah, it's not easy. We started in Georgia in 2023. We expanded to three new states. We're in a total of four states right now. And by the end of 2024, we'll be in 10 states. And those are mainly swing states or battleground states that we're looking at, states that are politically important, maybe some states that have big ballot measures happening. That's kind of where we're looking at for 2024. For us, we believe it's more important for a voter to have complete information about everything on their ballot, including the local stuff, rather than offering a service that maybe covers nationally all of the federal candidates, but doesn't have any information about the state and local candidates. And so for us, our approach is focusing on key states and in each of those states, making sure that we have.
You're going to go deep first and then broad later.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Another area that I followed for years, because there's been a jillion startups in it, is people who thought that one of the problems was people not knowing how to vote and making kind of a interface where you survey the person about their stands and then you match them with candidates, right? And I've seen a lot of those. And in fact, one of them that I had talked to a number of years ago just sold to a media organization. I haven't followed up on that, but it's interesting. You know, it's one of the few that hasn't just disappeared. Has you considered ever pulling in something about like helping someone match themselves up based on what they tell you with what is out there that you know about the candidates or the ballot initiatives is another big thing?
Yeah, totally. We looked at this when we originally first started. This is part of our like market research and our consumer research or prototyping phase. We looked at what's the best way that people want to like receive this information. And we actually like tested this. We gave people different guides, including ones that are already out there. We gave them, you know, a newspaper article and said, you know, choose your candidates. And we gave them these sort of like questionnaire style approaches. And we said, choose your candidates. And generally the thing that we found is that most people prefer to have a look at who the candidates are holistically and make a decision for themselves. And it's just because there's a lot of distrust in the political space. I think a lot of people are wary that if there's some sort of algorithm that's matching them to,
they're going
to
get tricked.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's something that even in our approach, there's still a lot of distrust that we have to kind of like overcome or build trust with our users. But this is, I think, the most effective way to do it is by being very clear about here's the information, here's where we looked for this information. You can see it directly. We have considered, you know, some elements to make that process faster for people. So having all that information, but then on an additional layer, like if you want us to recommend somebody for you based on who you voted for in the past or what you've indicated as your preferred stances, then we can do that. But we're not going to push you into that funnel, and we're not going to kind of put the blinders on.
What's your kind of theory, political philosophy about why this is a good thing?
Yeah, the biggest kind of core of our mission is helping people's votes to matter. I think a big problem that we have right now as a democracy is many people believe that their vote doesn't matter. And that's because in many ways, their vote doesn't matter, whether it's structural issues like gerrymandering, money in politics. I think a lot of people see these issues and they feel very disaffected. The Electoral College is another example. People feel very like disaffected by the impact of
or them. Just the impact of one vote when you have an election that probably is going to be decided by a lot more than one vote.
Yeah, exactly. Or even like decided by more than one vote, but by somebody in a different state that I should have the same standing as. And
yeah, I mean, I had a guest recently who really felt that the local politics angle and fighting it out everywhere, this was a person on the left, was the antidote to people not caring. Because if they think I'm in a district which is uncontested one way or the other, if I'm in a state that the Electoral College is a preordained conclusion, why does it matter? But as you've pointed out and kind of underlying your product is most people's ballots are pretty long. And I think there's a lot of consensus that local officials might affect your life more.
Yeah. Coming into this space originally, I was always shy about the fact that I was new to politics. But now it's something that I definitely like tout as a strength, because what you don't realize if you're not from this world is how little people actually understand about that consensus, about how local politics matter.
The political animals don't understand it because they've been immersed in it since they were six. Once you're immersed in any subject, whether it's circuits or politics, you forget what it was like before you understood what a NAND gate was or something.
You do know some electrical engineering. Yeah, exactly. And I remember like first getting into the space again, I didn't know simple terms. Like civic engagement was like a big thing that I was like, everybody keeps saying this. What does this mean? And so I think we take for granted what people actually understand. For me, like the kind of crown jewel, and I think unlocking civic engagement that's really authentic, unlocking the sense of like efficacy that's really authentic, and also doesn't just show up every 2 to 4 years and needs to be reactivated, but like shows up every single election that happens, you know, as often as every, you know, 4 to 6 months. The key to all of that is understanding this sort of consensus you mentioned, which is that local politics does matter in a lot of ways more than federal politics. A big thing we do on our site is we like spell out specifically your city council member makes decisions that impact policing. They do that by deciding how many police are on the street, what police budgets look like, what approaches are taken to policing. Like we spell it out in very clear terms. Our real goal, yes, is to educate people on the candidates, but it's really to like unlock this aha moment for every voter that state and local politics really do like matter a lot. And that's really our big ethos here.
Have you run into Democracy Works enterprise that has a turbo vote and also is aiming at the ballot space as well?
Yeah, I'm familiar with them at a high level.
And Ballot Ready, which you mentioned, also, I believe, has coverage of all of the 50 states at this point and is pretty well established. Why is there a need for what you're building on top of what is already out there?
A few, I think, like key distinguishing things about us. We are kind of squarely focused on this problem of how do we make the process for somebody to like get informed about their ballot as easy and as seamless as possible, especially for like a first-time voter or an intermittent voter. That kind of design and way that shows up in our content, I think is very unique. And it's something that when you like compare our products side by side, other groups don't really have. And again, I think that shows up in the sort of like usage that we get. I think another unique thing about us is this approach of like going deep and focusing deep in a few states instead of going wide nationally. And it's not just about having the information to say like, oh, here's this candidate on the ballot, we know about them, but it's doing the extra work that we do to find local news articles, to look through Facebook posts, to like pull together a comprehensive view about who that candidate is. Those are like some of the things that we do to put like extra care into like making sure that everybody has full kind of information about these people who are on their ballot. And a lot of times, if you look at some of these other voter guides that exist nationally, that user experience is like an issue that comes up a lot of times, and also just like missing data at the local level, especially for like a smaller municipality. A lot of times that information is just not there, but that's something that we, because of our like strategic focus on going deep in the states that we work in, we're able to provide.
Who do you see as your market? If the people that are paying you are a lot of nonprofits and so on, do you also see businesses, governments? Who in the long run would you love to have utilizing what you're building?
Yeah, I mean, in the long run, like I would love for this to exist as like a public service, something that like right now people can go to their county website and see where their polling locations are, but they can't see, you know, who their candidates are a lot of times. We've spoken with a lot of like city and state and county election agencies that talk about this as like one of the biggest questions they get when voters call in.
Have you tried selling to local governments?
We have. It's not the right choice for us right now as a young startup, especially one that's primarily bootstrapped and just funded by our revenue, because those typically have like a lot longer lead times. And
you sell it as sort of software as a service, like a rental?
Yeah.
Yeah. What else should I be asking you about what you're doing at Branch?
I think one of the things that is interesting to talk about is like why in 2024 this like specifically matters.
Why in 2024 does this specifically matter? That question seemed to crack you up.
No, I think
it was a genius question. Come on.
that was a great question. I think for a few reasons, we're in like a very unique political moment, right? So we have one of the kind of big concerns, I think, right now that a lot of organizations are dealing with is the sense of like voter apathy. We've seen like a lot of polls come out recently about, I read one poll that showed, I think it was over half of voters want different candidates in the general election for the presidential race other than Trump and Biden, especially like voter turnout groups are really going to have to like grapple with is the sense of like voter apathy, which again, I just think goes back to why messaging state elections, messaging local elections, messaging state ballot measures that are going to be on the ballot, like all these things really matter to, I don't know, draw people's attention towards all the other things besides the presidential election, if that's the only lens that they're looking at right now.
So you're a number of years now into this expedition into political entrepreneurship. What have you learned that you wish you knew at the beginning or that you could convey to someone else who might be a little earlier on that curve, perhaps?
One thing that I think is interesting about like political entrepreneurship specifically is it's a very unique market that not many people understand. It's a very like seasonal market. And in most traditional tech spaces, people just don't know how to deal with that. They don't know how to deal with the fact that like most of our revenue comes every 4 years, or that most of the revenue comes like a few months out of the year. There are like challenges with that as well. Like from a design perspective, you cannot just be constantly like iterating and releasing new features, A/B testing new features, because you really only become popular a few months out of the year, a few weeks out of the year, maybe. I think that's something that's like an interesting challenge. And so I think it's important to kind of find this sort of community that you're building, finding people that understand that unique political tech intersection.
When you have capacity, like research capacity or the technical capacity that you've built, a lot of times a good business move is to think about where can I apply that capacity during the times when it's less needed. I mean, maybe the research capacity is needed all the time, but it seems like it's all a little seasonal. And is the tech that you've built applicable to something else? Have you cast about for what else you could throw this at and what comes to mind?
Yeah, We tried things like keeping people informed about their legislative sessions. And this is not just a matter of repurposing our technology, but it's also a matter of keeping our audience engaged and the people that use our software, helping people understand what's going on during legislative session. We've looked at other aspects of civic engagement. For us right now, where we're at, it makes the most sense for us to like stay really like doggedly focused on this issue of like helping people get informed about their ballot and what's on their ballot and who these candidates are. And I think it's really like the magic of what we do. And so kind of started to view those other aspects as distractions and things that may make sense down the line when we have bukus of extra capacity. But for right now, we're kind of staying focused.
When you said that you were pretty interested in Stacey Abrams in Georgia and a number of Democrats in New Hampshire, it occurred to me that there might be a partisan leaning personally for you based on that. There's a lot of temptation, I think, with people who have that, who are running a nonpartisan entity, to find a way to use it to favor one side over the other. How do you think about that?
To echo what you're saying, like the ecosystem itself is very like bent towards that. I mean, you know this working in the political tech space, you effectively have these mirroring sides of political technology. You know, you have ActBlue and WinRed, two synonymous services that exist with two kind of opposing client bases. So there's a lot of these forces that kind of, you know, push you towards that direction. To talk about Stacey Abrams, that was really the first year in Georgia that I heard people talking about state politics. It was one of the first years that like the main thing that people were talking about when they talked about politics wasn't the president. It was some state office, even if it was the governor. That's why that was significant. For me, I very much view my role and our role as Branch as almost like an election official, right? Where election officials, election administrators care a lot about elections. They care a lot about our government and the way that our, you know, society works. But their role within that is not about kind of advancing their own views by any means. It's to create a better system that works and is like really representative of the people's views. And so that is what keeps me engaged in this. That's what keeps me passionate about this. And again, we talk with voters all the time who use our service because they value that. Even like some of the, you know, most dogged advocates of our service are, you know, very strong progressive voices who value being able to send their friends and people that they're trying to get involved in voting to a nonpartisan resource.
And there's a lot of evidence actually in different contexts that that is much more effective in giving people a chance to actually listen.
You have to treat voters as their people at the end of the day. It's easy looking at it from, you know, the numbers and the different blocks and the
count. They're not gadgets.
Yeah, exactly. Where we put this in front of them and then, you know, they'll think this way. And obviously that's like how a lot of, again, polling and setup, messaging testing, it goes so much more, especially when you're talking about, I mean, our clients are nonprofits that are trying to build relationships with voters in their community. And that is almost more important than having their voters turn out a certain way. Building those relationships, you have to trust people. You have to honor their kind of independence and their ability to make the decision for themselves. I think that's something that gets missed a lot of times in the space.
Well, it's great to talk to you today. Good to hear what you're up to and why. Anything else you want to say?
Yeah, thanks. And thanks for the fun questions, tough questions. It's been a while since I've talked about my young roots in programming. So I appreciate you asking about that.
You do a good job. So
thanks.
Fun to talk to you.
That was Walter. He is at ballot-builder.com. This is Nathaniel G. Perlman with the Great Battlefield Podcast. You can find us at greatbattlefield.com or by searching for Great Battlefield in places where podcasts are found. The Great Battlefield is now part of the Democracy Group Podcast Network. Visit democracygroup.org to learn more about other podcasts that cover democracy and civic engagement. You can also help me by leaving comments and good ratings on Apple Podcasts or elsewhere, and by sending me suggestions for great guests to nperlman@gmail.com.